Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. All right, welcome back. We are talking about comics and all kinds of stuff. There's a little bit of news, but not a ton, so we're just going to burn through that real quick.
Yep,
let's do it. First of all, Gaming with Rogues this Saturday. Come out and play Boss Monster. It'll be fun. We'll have prizes. On to the news.
What are the prizes?
There's little Boss Monster cards and paper playmats.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Where do we get those?
Santa brought them.
Santa's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's pretty good. He's pretty good.
Santa's going to hook people up.
So, there's a bit of a mix of news here, and it's comics and TV and movies, and a lot of it's more rumory than we tend to get into.
Right, but there's not like a big comic conventions and things going on right at the moment, so there's not huge news occurring.
Right. So, something interesting is that there is an X-Men show, there's one coming up called Legion, which we've seen trailers for. There's apparently another X-Men show that is nearing a pilot order at Fox. It's untitled, and it is going to be done by Burn Notice creator Matt Nix, and casting's already underway. So the plot of it is that it focuses on two ordinary parents who discover their children possess mutant powers, forced to go on the run from a hostile government, which apparently includes Sentinels.
Yeah, it does include Sentinels.
Now, is it real Sentinels, or is it fake-ass human-sized Sentinels?
Like nanotech sentinels are scanning the area.
The image that they showed was the image from Days of Future Past.
I wasn't sure if they were going to really play off of those. I mean, was that just an article about this?
Somebody the art that they used. But right. I wouldn't be shocked.
So we don't know.
No.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Honestly, giant sentinels don't make a lot of sense because they'd be a huge hazard to the public. Yeah. They look very physically like scary to everybody and not just mutants.
Yeah.
But they're cool.
They're cool, and therefore
if they had them like wear like you know, sort of like a you know these like 10 or 12 foot tall ones are sort of like considered the patrol models or whatever. And like you know, in the event of alpha mutants, we will of course you know activate full sentinels. You know that would be so awesome.
The coolest sentinel though was human sized, right? Which is Nimrod.
No, Nimrod is not the coolest sentinel.
The coolest sentinel is oddly just Sentinel.
Yes.
A Sentinel.
The coolest Sentinels are the Sentinels.
Oh, man, I love Nimrod.
Though. Oh, I love Nimrod, fantastic. Too, but he is not anybody, the coolest Sentinel.
Right. He's like a weird... He's an outlier.
Yeah.
He is like their ultimate badass. He's the equivalent of the T-1000 in Terminator 2.
Yeah, he definitely was.
The most unstoppable of them all, but...
He's the boss Sentinel.
But Sentinels are actually best kind of... In a way, they're like Stormtroopers. They're kind of coolest as a destroyable mass of things.
Yeah.
They just happen... It happens that they are big-sized.
What if they are small-sized and they can nook-chook up to giant Sentinel size?
I think even referencing that cartoon is somehow racist. He's talking about Apache Chief on Super Friends, y'all.
Because in the 90s in the X-Men, that's where they had the human Sentinels, right? Like when... what was that storyline with the X-Men?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, the ones that were infected with the technovirus.
Yeah, and that was an interesting idea. I don't know if that's something they want to play around with.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, but honestly, I just want them to get Sentinels right once.
For TV budget, I suspect, and also given that we're probably not going to be... I mean, are they going to even be speaking the words X-Men? Are they going to say, like...
Well, see, that's...
You know, like, are they going to be called a terrorist thing on TV? Because that'd be kind of cool, actually, to see...
That's
see
the interesting thing. The family joins up with an underground network of mutants and must fight to survive. So
the network of mutants sounds like the Morlocks.
That's what I was thinking. It sounds more Morlock than X-Men. But if the X-Men are sort of an underground group, I mean, there was that cartoon Wolverine and the X-Men where the X-Men were more of an underground.
Yeah, it was cool.
And that's not a terrible way to go.
Yeah. But, I can see it. But here's the thing. If these guys do not do the big building-sized Sentinels, I can sort of forgive them on that. It seems like a family on the run, in general, is like unless their kids are like really powerful, are probably not going to be the kind of people that will be fighting Sentinels. They're going to be more like kind of like the rank and file mutants of the Marvel Universe who don't become superheroes.
Yeah, I would not expect real Sentinels. They'll probably just use the name. It's the movies that have let us down. They should have given us giant Sentinels.
Yep, they still, even when they finally got around to bigger Sentinels, they still did not live up to it.
They were okay in Days of Future Past.
You know what
past?
Is the closest I've seen to a Sentinel in a movie? When they fought that big thing at the end of The Incredibles, that big octopus-looking thing,
yeah.
That was closer to how I want a Sentinel fight to go down.
Yeah.
It's got to be big. And I recognize that was like more boss level, but it was still kind of in the ballpark.
Yep. Agreed. Another bit of news that's sort of rumory and movie-ish is that The Rock apparently stopped by DC's offices or WB Films or whatever and talked to them about Black Adam.
Yeah, I guess so. And he was tweeting about it.
Yep. I thought it was almost confirmed. I mean, outright confirmed.
I mean, he's definitely playing Black Adam. It seems like he was just kind of talking about what directions they were doing.
Oh, yeah. That's right. This is sort of a general buzz for what DC has in store.
Yeah, he was saying fun.
Yeah, he says that they're going to be sort of adopting sort of some lighter atmosphere. And I think he said something, I forget what the actual tweet was, but he's like, considering I'm playing this kind of, you know, warlord-type fascist, you know, villain. He's like, you know, this sounds weird. He's like, but there's some cool, fun stuff coming up. And, you know, it sounds a little bit like, you know, if not for the fact that DC has done so many kind of darker turns lately, this otherwise sounds like the kind of neat stuff that Marvel does, you know, where they'll have, you know, the people who are playing their characters kind of tend to throw themselves into it. They do fun things. They do charitable stuff.
I really hope they get somebody fun for Billy.
Do you think Black Adam's going to show up at the kids' hospitals and be like, I am Black Adam! Get out of your beds and get better, children!
Kneel before the forces of Karak! No, Kandak. That's his.
Kandak. Karak is
I'm mixing up their various fictional Middle Eastern nations. Yes. There's even another one, right?
I think there is.
I'm missing out on one.
But this is sort of also a rumory news about the Green Lantern movie that they're getting.
That's right. We hear that there's a Lethal Weapon in space is their pitch, that Geoff Johns and David Goyer are working on it, which brings me to the question, why on earth is David Goyer still involved with the DC movies?
Because he's so entrenched in
It's like Zack Snyder. We're never going to get them out. They're the cancer at the center of the DC.
Because he's made so much money for them, right?
Yeah, but
he was tacked on to all the Dark Knight.
But he's terrible.
Try to tell him that. I mean, Dark Knight is probably one of the best. You know, those are some of the best grossing superhero movies of all time.
I know. I understand.
I like the notion of Lethal Weapon in space. Though. Right, it's a great pitch.
So to round out the discussion of that, they're talking about Hal Jordan and John Stewart, which are two of the best known Green Lanterns. You know,
it would
the
only
icon
have been better if it's at Guy Gardner,
the animated icon.
That would not make anything better, Nick.
Guy Gardner and John Stewart?
Nope.
You know, I think the problem there. Well. They're depending on how they depict Hal and John, you know, Hal's kind of square-jawed and John Stewart's kind of square-jawed, depending on how they play it. Now, John Stewart, they could lean into the military thing. Hal, they could lean into the reckless thing.
He can be the cocky guy. I mean, you could definitely do it.
Yeah.
What about, it should have been Kyle and Guy. That would have been a really cool.
Yeah, you know what? Guy Gardner can show up Lethal Weapon in Space 2, and he can be Leo Getz in space. That's what he can be.
He's not Space Joe Pesci.
Yeah, he's Space Joe Pesci.
Oh, yeah, he is.
I would say, are you talking about Kyle or Guy?
We're talking about Guy.
Yeah. I was going to say, Guy is not a guy you lead a movie with.
No.
Sorry.
No.
He is, honestly, people would be. If it lacked Stewart, John Stewart and Hal, that people would be like, who are these guys?
Yeah.
Except for the longtime fans, and they need to broaden it past that.
I want a scene where
I would actually love to see Kyle and Guy in there in the mix, maybe in a sequel or something like that. Or as like, you know, it'd be kind of cool if they're rookies in this, or Guy is like the instructor. Like if he and Kilowog were like some of the trainers or something like that.
Mm.
I mean, I don't think you necessarily want them before Hal and John Stewart establish themselves as the Green Lanterns that we care about.
Right.
But if they were like some other cops essentially space cops that they kind of, you know, butted heads with a little bit, you know, Guy is almost more of the put in the plan of the evidence kind of guy.
Yep.
Cop. And Kyle is the, you know, rookie guy who's still in training and you just very minor part of the story. I think that could be kind of cool.
I believe that everything you described is going to be better than what they eventually present us. I remain doubtful of DC until they produce one movie I don't hate.
Right, we know of your stance, Randy.
Randy just
rubber stamps these all comments on DC movies.
I want that on record every time that I am not an optimist yet.
We will not. You'll never have to bear the shame of it. you are cynic number one, Randy.
Yes, exactly. All I want is a scene where the Guardians look over at John Stewart and he's like, but you're Blick. Bendis has attached himself to yet another successful thing at Marvel. He's doing a Defenders miniseries.
It's a miniseries.
I think it's a miniseries. I mean, could be it's an ongoing, but you know it'll run a certain amount of time. But yeah, there's a new Defenders.
It's based on the sort of the Netflix TV Defenders characters. So Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Daredevil,
and Iron Fist.
That's
everybody.
Yeah. It is weird that probably what is going to become the best known public version of the Defenders is not who the Defenders were for decades on end at Marvel.
Yeah.
Which is, was it Hulk, Doctor Strange?
Silver Surfer, and Namor.
Yeah. Like some of the most powerful characters they have versus now like some of the most street level characters they have.
It is a weird rebranding. It makes sense, but yeah. I wish it wasn't Bendis doing it. I just, his take on these characters, like, I don't. He's definitely deserves credit. I mean, well, he's the guy who brought
He
created Jessica Jones. He brought Luke Cage back to prominence. He arguably brought Daredevil back to prominence. Yeah. I understand why he gets this job, but I don't think I'm going to read his version. I wish David Walker was the guy writing it.
Yeah, and I also think Bendis's team book credentials are not great. But, you know, I suppose because of Jessica Jones and Daredevil, I'd be interested to take a look, see what he wants to do.
Tom Brevoort specifically noted that this would be, the groundwork had been laid for this in his New Avengers run, which, of course, I wasn't reading, but, you know, he did have a lot of these characters around during his New Avengers run, so I guess we may be looking at something similar to that vibe, which is great for me because I hated that run.
Do we know what the... Randy's going to go ahead and sign off as Arch Cynic number one for the episode.
That's what I'm doing.
Do we know what the threat is going to be that they're going up against?
I don't know. No idea.
I thought I remember reading something about one of the articles, some sort of, I mean, maybe it's just a sort of threat to New York. I know that they said they're keeping it local like that.
I hope it's Sentinels.
I hope it's Mephisto.
I hope it's a Mephisto Sentinel.
That's just silly, Randy.
All right. We got the trailer for Injustice 2, another trailer for Injustice 2.
Right. The first one was like sort of a teaser.
Yeah, this one kind of is too.
It is, but it's a long
one. Injustice 2 being the sequel to the surprisingly breakout fighting game.
Injustice 1.
With DC superhero characters and a kind of a dark future where Superman gets pushed to the edge and becomes a sort of fascistic world, you know, controller guy.
Well, that's what happens when you kill Lois.
Joker kills Lois. She's pregnant at the time. Or actually tricks Superman into
killing her, basically.
And then, Superman just, like, punches a hole in him, the end of Joker.
Also, the nuke Metropolis. Don't forget about that.
Right. And so you know, if they're going to, like, find a way to make Superman go bad, the interesting thing about this is, while that sounds like grim, they did a good job with it. I believe the premise had it, Randy, that you were generally playing characters from the there was time travel stuff, right? Because they were taking characters from the pre-dark world to try and help them stop that Superman's
control.
I thought
it was an alternate reality.
No, it's the future. They go back in time and bring people. I mean, it is an alternate reality, but it's a futuristic reality.
But the idea is to take people from the not yet dark past and just to overthrow Superman. We need warm bodies.
I believe that's what it was, yes.
And
the thing is, I think this is one of those games that Eric kept telling me how good it was, and it was like based on the Mortal Kombat engine, and I thought, this sounds terrible, this is not going to be for me, and I wound up really liking it. It's a fun, the beat 'em up is fun, it's well done, but it's also got a good, really good story, scenes. Yeah.
And as we last week we were talking about on Tom Taylor Tuesday,
yep.
He wrote the graphic or the comics based on it that were set in the years leading up to it, and they've been some of the best DC books of the last few years.
And he's coming back to write the.
He is doing Injustice 2 comics, yes, which is cool.
Is it going to work in conjunction with the story that the gamer?
No idea. We don't even know what the story of the game is because it's clear it's got Supergirl, it's got Brainiac, it's got Darkseid.
So yeah, to talk about a little bit about the trailer, it's a very sort of like. Ambiguous trailer as far as like it doesn't want to reveal necessarily whole plot points, and it's
narrated by Brainiac.
That is to say, you only know that at the end. It's not like it's Brainiac.
Or right now when we just spoil it.
Has him talking kind of abstractly about the changing alliances and factions, and you see a Superman who's been deposed and who's like in chains.
Yep.
But it looks like, do we get the impression that they're going to have to free him, that they're going to need him?
I'm not sure. The thing I think is interesting to me is that it looks like Supergirl is at odds with Wonder Woman, which means that Supergirl is not with Superman. I think that's interesting. Maybe like Batman's resistance grabbed another Kryptonian, that would sort of make sense.
They also, what was I talking about? Like, you know, Brainiac was talking about like, you know, the specters of the past, and you see Supergirl looking up and this world explodes. Or
Krypton.
Is that all that was supposed to be?
Yeah, for sure.
Ah, okay.
And then I also think that we see Robin fighting with Batman. And the weird thing is, it looks like the Arkham Knight Robin?
Well, it's Damian.
But it is Damian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just sort of a weird... He looks older than Damian is usually portrayed in the comics, so...
Well, that's who the Nightwing is in the first Injustice. It's Damian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'd forgotten Dick got killed.
That's right. I forgot that.
Right. And, you know, this is supposed to be, you know, probably a good 10, 12 years out or
yeah,
more.
That's right.
So he would be in his 20s.
That's right.
The graphics, of course, look amazing. We're mostly not seeing the in-game engine here, but the computer cutscenes.
Sure,
and they look great. There is a sort of dusty Chris. No, who's the director?
Zack Snyder.
Color palette to it. But weirdly, I think we would probably all say we have more faith at this point in the Injustice creators.
It's weird because this does not look like it looks like the same mopey, dusty thing that the DC does, and I should be as cynical about this as I am about everything else, but because I liked Injustice so much, I kind of am pretty excited for this.
Right, and you know, there is something to be said for the fact that it is an alternate possible future,
sure.
So it's not like we are going to actually run our regular characters through this grinder and having Batman and Superman hate each other and all that. And here's the funny thing is, like, they sort of make reasonable cases for both sides of them.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of a good, you know, way to view things like a better way to do view things like Civil War and and such, where no character has to be the fall guy. I mean, it seems like it's obvious, you know, oh, Superman, he's fascist. That's immediately evil. But it's like, you see all that's done to him. They portray, you know, the Joker. You know, they can do the stuff that they do in What Ifs and Elseworld comics,
yeah,
which is to kind of push everything to the edge.
Yeah, that's one of the things about the Injustice comics. I just read the Year 2 graphic novel, which came out last week, and the big collection of it.
Yep.
And it's the Green Lantern Corps sort of being pitted against Superman's forces, and Superman joining up with Sinestro. And it's funny because it should be he's working with Sinestro, he's the bad guy. And I felt myself sympathizing with Superman on a lot of things. Like, they do a really good, Tom Taylor in particular did a really good job. And I bet, I don't know if he's involved in the development or not, but I bet he was.
They should bring him in for the game.
Yeah.
Because he wrote all these great scenes, and amidst all this kind of big, whose side are you on kind of stuff, are all these smaller character scenes that are like, oh man, I just wish Tom Taylor had been part of, like, almost reconceptualizing DC for Rebirth. Like,
yeah, he would have been a great guy to have on for Rebirth.
By the way, Randy, I had a crazy thought earlier.
Yeah?
It's a crazy notion.
Yeah.
That if DC were to relaunch yet again, as inevitable someday.
I see no way that will happen.
If they were to do it again, I do wonder what would happen if what people always often like about DC are these what-if stories, whether it's Superman, Red Sun, or these dark and alternate futures like Injustice. And they like it at Marvel, too. They like X-Men, Age of Apocalypse, and stuff like that.
Yep.
Not necessarily to go into that direction, but to go with a universe in which you finally do what people have kind of always requested, sort of real-time characters that live or die and are held to it.
Yeah.
Kind of do what you sort of do in these somewhat more extreme versions. Not necessarily mean that it's always, like, grim and gritty, just that the consequences remain and you adamantly hold them down.
Sure, let's give that a shot next time.
That's what I'm just saying. But if you get like a Tom Taylor or somebody as the mastermind behind it, is my notion, and I should get credit for it. Oh, good. I should also be one of the supervisors.
Oh, good call. Yep. Okay. One last bit of news, and this is a TV bit of news. The trailer went up for Santa Clarita Diet, which is starting on Netflix on February 9th.
What did you just say?
It's a Netflix original, right?
Yep.
Did you say Santa Clarita Diet?
Yes. It is a zombie show.
Yep. Starring Drew Barrymore.
Timothy Oliphant.
Which I knew it was Drew Barrymore.
This is the thing that Drew Barrymore is producing, is it?
Yeah.
I heard it originally described as like some cannibal thing, so it's a zombie thing?
She's turning into a zombie. It's in suburbia, and they're sort of trying, and she's having to basically survive as she's. It's very iZombie, really.
Tongue in cheek?
Well, it looks like it's a weird kind of cross between like iZombie and. Did you ever see that Kathleen Turner movie, Serial Mom?
No, but I know of it.
I did not expect this to come up today.
That is a question, by the way, that has not been asked of many people ever.
Movie, even in all the alternate universes.
I saw that movie in theaters. It was a fun movie. But it feels like in that line of notion where, you know, you kind of have to make your peace with killing people. And that's sort of what it is here.
Somebody explain to me what the premise is.
It appears that Drew Barrymore is a mom. They've got kids. Timothy Oliphant's her husband. Mm-hmm. She basically just seems to die one day and then starts eating people. And they have to determine how they're going to get food for her.
Okay.
Yeah. She's a real estate agent. It's Yeah, it's
and how did it look?
It looks great. It looks really fun.
That sounds messy to me.
It looks really funny.
I like Drew Barrymore. I don't know if like sitcom-y or kind of like dark, weird sitcom might be a good fit for, you know, everybody. Or I don't know, maybe it doesn't know. She's produced a fair amount of stuff, but kind of most notably Donnie Darko, her production company.
Well, and Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
But Donnie Darko is the one that came to mind as a, because it is often a dark comedy throughout. It has a lot of very funny stuff, a lot of darkly funny stuff.
Yeah.
I think she does well with comedy.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. I think this looks really fun to me, and I thought Timothy Olyphant putting on his comedy hat again was great. This also, by the way, is the creator of Better Off Ted.
Yeah.
Is involved in it. So I'm super excited about this, and the trailer looks fantastic. So.
Sure, it'll drop near Valentine's Day. It'll be kind of...
Yep. That'll be their marketing.
Yes.
All right. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, January 18th. And I'm going to start off with another new Image book. Last week I was very big on God Country, which we did sell out of. We're waiting on new printing of number one.
Mm-hmm. That was quite the breakout.
Yep, and it's great. This one is Curse Words by Charles Sewell. Art is by Ryan Brown from God Hates Astronauts. And this is a weird book.
It is.
It's a tough one to describe, honestly.
It's true. You know what's weird, Randy?
Yep.
The closest thing I can think of to describe it,
uh-huh,
and maybe it's just because of that koala, but it is something that you don't like, which is Next Wave.
What?
Don't you think there is a little bit of Next Wave to that?
Next Wave with lizards?
I guess.
All right. Well, go ahead. You give your pitch.
I don't know. Anyway, it's a wizard with he's got a big old bushy beard. He's a traditional looking wizard. His name is Wizord.
But he's like in the modern times.
Yeah,
he's not even evil.
He's in modern times. He opens making deals with this platinum artist who wants to be turned into real platinum for some reason.
Right, it's like a kind of a snotty, Justin Bieberish type dude.
And his rule is no cures, no wars, no love. He can't do that. But anything else he can do with magic, he makes this deal. And then this other guy shows up looking like something of a Shakespeare play, floating around with his own wand, and they fight over Manhattan with giant magic. And it's very sort of superhero-y magic. It's like blasting and teleporting and Kirby-esque to some extent. But then it flashes back to show us how Wizard arrived in the world and what his... what it was he was supposed to do here, which I won't give away, but is kind of a notable thing, and that he became sort of a celebrity wizard.
Yeah.
It's very strange, but very entertaining. It's definitely comedic, but it's not like hokey kind of comedic, right. I don't think.
I mean, like, you know, Charles Sewell, he wrote She-Hulk during, a strong run a couple years back.
Yep.
And, of course, he's done serious stuff like Death of Wolverine and, why am I suddenly blanking? What else? He's written a million books.
Yes, he's written Daredevil. He's written a lot of the Inhuman stuff. Yeah.
Star Wars things.
Yep.
He's one of those guys we like.
Yep.
Generally speaking, he's got a pretty good track record.
Yep.
I enjoyed this too. It is a strange book. I almost don't know what to say other than people need to just give it a shot.
Yeah. God Country was easier for me to describe, and God Country is by no means straightforward. But this one is very strange. But again, it's
like a talking like koala and like a rat.
He's got a sarcastic talking koala as his sidekick and familiar. It's definitely talking about the foibles of the modern world. Mm-hmm. And
it's got satirical elements. And
like I said, one of the easiest pitches I would have would give away sort of the game at the end. And I don't want to give away the twist. But I will say this is another promising Image book. It's got quotes in the back from Jeff Lemire, Kieran Gillen, Tim Seeley, Jim Zub. So plenty of people who are digging it. And I thought it was a really fun first issue. So give this one a look.
It's the one with the wizard riding a motorcycle on the cover.
Yep, and there's a dragon.
Yes.
It could definitely go on a van.
Yes.
Dave, what is your pick?
I've got an Image pick for later, but I'm going to kick off. My pick this week is from Marvel. And I actually don't know a whole lot about like how big a crossover type thing this is. You probably know more about it than I do. I forget the deal. But it's Monsters Unleashed number one.
It is a crossover in that it has they're going to be doing issues that are specifically Monsters Unleashed issues.
Remember, most Marvel books?
For like 10 or 20 of them. And it's like Avengers number 1.mu.
Right.
Yeah, so they're all like separate outside the regular.
Okay, little sort of side books.
Yeah.
But essentially, this is like a kaiju giant monster invasion of the Marvel Universe, which with like sort of like... almost when it begins, it looks like meteors crashing on Earth, and they've got these like these giant monsters in it. Now, I believe so far in this, most of them are original that we see. There's some of them are but kind of in the tradition of Marvel's old 60s monsters like Fin Fang Foom and stuff like that, but more like with the design quality of you would get from Pacific Rim.
Yeah. But they're definitely look more like Kirby-esque monsters, even the new ones.
You don't think so? The first one with that like split open mouth, that's very Guillermo del Toro.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and there's going to be a different artist on every issue. I think it's a 5-issue mini maybe, and there's five.
So this is
going
to be kind of the core series, and then we'll have crossover stuff.
Yeah, but I mean every issue of the miniseries will have a different artist.
Right.
Yeah, this one's McNiven, the next is Greg Land.
Right, and so just a quick say, the writer is Cullen Bunn, who's, like, so what of his big Marvel things been? He did Magneto.
He's been doing Uncanny X-Men for quite a while.
Uncanny X-Men. Mm-hmm. And Steve McNiven, who's probably best known for Civil War, the breakout miniseries from about a decade back. And he's a pretty good one to kind of ground it in all the destruction and stuff going on. This first issue is very much kind of like a snapshot of different parts throughout the world as different people take them on, most notably beginning with the Avengers going up against this. And I thought Cullen Bunn had some good team dynamics. It was kind of reminded me in a pleasant way of sort of kind of almost Bronze Age sort of superhero team dynamics, you know, kind of coordinating, strategizing, saving people. While trying to find out the weak spot on the monsters, there is a subplot going on that's revealing that at least one facet of what might be the cause of them, and I don't want to say too much about that because it's kind of one of the reveal-y type things of it. They also cut in on the X-Men taking on creatures in London. And, you know, part of it is just kind of the fun of seeing how these guys strategize against it, all the different teams. Like I say, these are more snapshots, not extended fights between them, but glimpses of how they're taking on all these very different creatures. Black Panther in Wakanda is dealing with it. I mean, it's destroyed the Royal Palace, so it's not some little small happening. I wonder if they'll be referencing this in Black Panther, or if it'll be kind of its own self-contained thing.
I would guess that second thing. Probably they'll be like, we don't live in the time where it used to be that Marvel would, there'd be a little asterisk in the editor's note like, why is he rebuilding the palace? See Monsters Unleashed number one.
Right.
They'll probably just ignore it.
We'll see. They sometimes they're pretty good about that. I mean, you know, they did reference like in Cap Sam Wilson this week. I saw him talking about, you know, having Peter Parker bail somebody else because he's making a lot of money with his thing now. So it is happening. Just a question of whether it'll happen here. Let's see, who else do we have? The Guardians of the Galaxy in Washington are taking on big creatures. In Venice, you've got the Inhumans. You know what? One of the ones that was my favorite appearances in this, and one of my favorite scenes in the issue, was actually it had Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what I liked seeing was that this was actually almost more what I wanted from the series. Not to disparage the series, which I think is a well-done book that's it's just a little too tongue-in-cheek for me.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of liked this as the serious thing. She's watching, you know, doing sort of astronomy stuff, watching it through a telescope, watching as the meteors land. And she and Devil Dinosaur are kind of trying to figure out what to do. And she's kind of determined to help out with it. And I'm kind of more interested to see that sort of serious side of her as one of the smartest characters in the Marvel Universe. And then there's also an appearance by...
My favorite part of the issue is the next part.
Yeah, I don't think there's a reason to keep the character
secret. No, there's
not. Elsa Bloodstone, the monster hunter from Next Wave.
She's an outright monster hunter.
Yep.
I mean, it makes sense.
And more traditionally, I would think probably like not kaiju-type like monsters. I think of her as probably like, I hunt werewolves and vampires and
stuff.
Yeah,
but... I mean, they make out basically, and her family has been sort of that's their reason, their call to arms in a lot of ways, and it's what her dad was there for. And I mean, it fits into this larger prophecy that has been sort of passed down for her. So
yeah, no, I liked her appearance too. She's almost like kind of Buffy by way of John Constantine. She's got, like, that Constantine
attitude. Yeah, that's about right.
I like that.
Yeah. Oh, and I forgot, by the way, the champions are in this, too, and there's kind of some fun, just an example of some of the fun dialogue. They're arguing over whether it's okay to call these things kaiju, since they landed on American soil. And somebody's like, no, it sounds like you're being pretentious if you do that, and Spider-Man's like, but it sounds cooler. Kaiju sounds cooler than monster, and...
he's right.
It is true. That should just become the default thing for giant monsters.
Colin Bunn had a pretty good handle on the characters.
Yeah. Well, when you have somebody who writes something that's going to be touching on all these different facets of the Marvel Universe,
it's hard.
I don't know if it's going to zero in more on just like certain Elsa Bloodstone or certain other characters, or if it's going to still be showing a lot of team stuff. But you have to be able to have somebody who can kind of write a bit of the X-Men, write a bit of the Avengers, write a bit of Champions, and they have to stay in their own voice. And then there is this sort of secret subplot as to what might be going on. But I thought it was a good, fun issue, and this was a series that I was not particularly anticipating. I vaguely knew it was coming up. But I think people would do to take a look at it if you are fans of, you know, Godzilla, Pacific Rim, anything like that, or just kind of want to see the superheroes having to take on something that is, you know, that sort of mega-scale kind of creature and not a plot from Magneto, not a Hydra plot to undermine the government, but a massive city-destroying creature, or many of them.
Nick, your pick?
My pick is another Marvel book, and I picked the first issue. Why not pick the second one? This is U.S. Avengers number 2, which I think you liked as well, right?
I really enjoyed this. I'm kind of on board this.
And this basically is the fallout of the version of Captain America from the future.
Hey, no, where has she shown up before in other books? I feel like she might have.
Didn't she show up in Peter David's the Avengers 2099?
No, I think that's a different one.
Is that a different one? Because I thought it was the same person.
Maybe so. I don't remember. It's Danielle Cage, the daughter of Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. Mm-hmm. Who has grown up to be Captain America 20XX.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And she's come to our time, to our dimension and our timeline, chasing a fugitive from their alternate timeline, the Golden Skull.
Yeah.
Which is a great premise, by the way.
Yes. So it's a bit of time travel, but not crazy. And she's come to Sunspot, who basically runs AIM now as a portion of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, it's like a like the think tank division of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right, sort of their mad scientist little subdivision.
Yeah.
And he's, of course, so on board going after a time-traveling villain.
Yeah.
Because that just sounds like fun to him.
Well, the thing I like about this, there's some really cool little bits. Like, they talk about the Golden Skull's possible origins, and I like, when you do a mysterious origin for a villain, but the hints, he's like, we think he might be a descendant of Partival the Plunderer, and I'm like, wow, that's a deep cut.
Wow.
And the other ones are just as good.
Yeah.
And then when they're trying to suss out what to do about him, Roberto calls in. He's got like a blue team, a red team, and like the different branches of AIM.
Yeah, the different branches of AIM.
And they're all in the cone head things, but it's like
the beekeeper.
Yeah.
So they've got admin and research, science and engineering, and security and tactics.
So it's like he calls up this helicarrier and he's like, hey guys, what do you got for me? And they all offer their insight into what they think's going on, and they put together a plan. It's a really cool version of superheroing.
And then they've got sort of a James Bond spy element. It's a
James Bond element, too, that's really fun.
And honestly, Al Ewing is just using these characters really, really well.
He really is.
He's given them, in a very short time, a great sense of character, and the team is just fun.
Yeah, it's really good. Who's the artist on this?
This is Paco Medina.
That's the biggest thing I had when they were doing New Avengers, I think, is they had an artist who I was not crazy about.
And Paco Medina is...
Paco Medina is great.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to see where this continues to go. I'm loving it so far.
This is a really fun sort of off-the-beaten-path kind of team book.
And I have to say, the Golden Skull, his look is great.
Yeah.
I think Paco Medina gave it sort of that Hellfire Club-ish look.
Yeah.
And that's a neat little nod.
Nick, what's your backup pick?
My backup pick is Justice League versus Suicide Squad number 5.
You've picked every issue of this book, I think. Number one.
Yes, except number one. But I have
number
one stuck.
No, honestly, I don't know. Have much more to say other than I'm just loving sort of where this keeps going.
What's the tone here?
Darkly serious, especially considering at the end of the last one, Maxwell Lord got his hands on the Eclipso Stone, or the, what is it called, the diamond, or the black diamonds,
yeah.
And basically is now overtaken the Justice League and is using them to secure the world and make it safe.
Yeah, I don't know how people, I mean, you know, long-time readers are probably pretty familiar with the slightly off-the-beaten-path villain Eclipso from DC, but he doesn't show up too often,
no,
but
he
is a pretty big-scale villain usually when they do use him.
But, yeah, it's basically...
lots of mind control and taking people over.
Yep, and Maxwell Lord is sort of using this to instill his will upon everyone and trying to make the world safe using the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Batman has not been mind-controlled because that would be silly. And he now forms his little Justice League team that we will see with the inclusion of Harley Quinn, Killer Croc, and Captain Boomerang. You know. So it's a...
Who's drawn this name?
This is drawn by... I'm blanking.
I mean, it looks Jim Lee-ish, but I don't think it's Jim Lee.
It's not Jim Lee.
Robson Rocha.
Okay. Kind of within that school.
But I really have liked what Joshua Williamson has brought to the table. It's fun, kind of big moments, and exactly what a crossover is supposed to be. And I really like his take on Lobo, because it feels very classic.
You know, when you get Lobo right, he is a fun little shot of adrenaline to any given scene.
Yeah.
He calls people Bastich, and that's fun.
Yep.
It's just been a lot of fun. I'm excited to see the conclusion of it next week.
Dave, I believe you have two also running favorites.
I'm cheating, and there's even going to be a trade paperback mentioned here, so it's some sort of triple cheat.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a triple changer? No, that'd be ridiculous. First up is from Image, Kill or Be Killed, number 5. The Zeb Brubaker's dark exploration of vigilante sort of storylines. It's... this latest issue, you know, we've been talking about this. This kid had he's like a college student, had a thing happen in the first issue, like an encounter with a demon, and I forget what the context of it was.
He tried to kill himself.
Right.
And at the last second decided that he didn't want to do it, and I think the demon saved him at the last possible second.
And then it basically gave him this mission that forces him to kill other people for the demon.
You have to kill somebody or you die.
Right. And he's after been X getting month, sort of month, better at it. He's been trying to kind of do, you know, justify, you know, kill people who are bad people.
Well, this issue starts like, was it several months later?
Yeah. So like some time has passed. It begins in media res with a violent opening sequence, and you're like, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a kind of a part of it later on that kind of cracked me up where he has a first-person narrative throughout the story.
He's talking directly to the reader.
And at some point he says something like, oh, you know, I probably should have mentioned that, but he's like, but it was pretty obvious this was in media res. He's like, so the kind of that's on you, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I was amused by him getting a little bit snarky with the reader.
Yeah.
He's been trying to kind of find bad people, and there's somebody here who mentions he's like poisoned dogs in a neighborhood.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, you know, he's like, I think I won't have any trouble killing this person. But there is a thing where he's talked about how like the voices of the demon has quieted and he only occasionally hears it. And you're like, is there a real demon? Or did he just have a weird hallucination in the moment before he was going to kill himself or something, or while he was dying or thought he was dying? There's ongoing sort of interesting relationship stuff. It's many of them are sort of dark scenes, but you also see he's training up a little bit. He got like somebody kicked the crap out of him in a previous issue.
Yep.
This lady beat him up, and he was like, "Oh, I don't know how to fight if things go wrong."
It's one of the things I like about this. It reminds me, and this is a weird reference. There's the '90s Fool Killer series that Steve Gerber wrote that was all about the practicalities of actually being a vigilante, and it had some very memorable stuff in it. This reminds me of that. It's like he's getting some boxing training, so he's used to getting hit. He's talking about the difference between a silenced pistol and a shotgun and the benefits of that. It's sort of the practicalities of being a vigilante, which is really interesting.
And he even makes a point to mention that, like, he's like, yeah, it turns out silenced pistols don't make that little kind of whisper you hear in movies.
Yeah.
He said it sounds more like a rock hitting a car door.
Yeah.
And there's some neat little craft bits like that.
Yeah.
It's messed up because you're like, man, that's... And he's aware that it's some messed up things to think about, and he's worried that he's starting to become, this is his new normal.
Mm-hmm.
Along the way, he bumps into an old friend who might be like a romance rekindled, who is an interesting character. I mean, liked her too. His new target, his kind of conundrum, is also an interesting one because it kind of plugs into current events. You know, I mean, this is one of those sort of perpetual things, but the guy is one of these, like, savings and loan kind of guys.
Bernie Madoff type, yeah.
Yeah, Bernie Madoff, who kind of, like, crashed a bunch of other people's lives. There were deaths and suicides and stuff in the wake of his, you know, financial malfeasance. And he got off with, like, a slap on the wrist in a white-collar prison. And he happens to, when this guy sees him at a restaurant, he's like, this could be the next target. And yeah, he starts thinking about it. But that is kind of a high-profile guy, and he starts going through the logistics of it. Anyway, continues to be a really fascinating book, and for those who are, like, coming in late to it, the trade paperback is out this week.
Yep.
So that's pick number one.
And it's $10.
Oh, wow. That's one of those Image $10 ones?
Yep.
Sweet.
Yeah, I think we still have all four original issues for people who want the issues, but if you're a trade person, the trade's out this week, and highly recommended.
If you are an issue person, you should know that they, you know, I believe, I don't know if it's every issue, but Brubaker continues to do the extra material at the end, which includes a lot of thoughts on movies and things like that that are within the revenge genre.
Yeah, this issue is the one on number five is a 70s Elliot Gould movie.
Yeah, it sounded really interesting. I wasn't aware of it, but I was just starting to read about it, and I was like, I want to check this out.
Yep.
The other book that I have picked almost every issue of since I kind of got on board it is Captain America Sam Wilson.
This is also my cheater pick because, as we know, these are always my picks.
A cheater pick?
A cheater pick.
The craziest thing about this series lately is that they've taken, and I touched on this a little bit last time I talked about it, they've taken kind of slightly cheesy 90s character Rage, the character who is a sort of embodiment of young Black Rage. Mm-hmm. He's a hot-headed, he was a teenager, I don't know if he's supposed to be in his 20s maybe now, character, and they've made him a kind of well-realized character.
Oh, yeah.
Who is at the forefront of this battle with the robotic AmeriCops. Which, you know, this is police brutality stuff in the mix, but kind of writ large in the superhero tradition. It's not like he's commenting on it in interesting ways rather than just having a, you know, a clash between a, you know, Black person and overzealous cops. This is, you know, kind of big Marvel style version of it. What happened? There's a lot of stuff in this issue Rage trying to is in prison, and Sam is trying to figure out what to do to get him out. He's got some footage that may exonerate him, but it also might blow up in America's face and cause rioting and stuff. Yep. So he's like talking to the people that mean something to him. I love Misty Knight in this series. She's a recurring character. She's great. All the supporting characters are interesting, including the new Falcon. And D-Man. I pretty much liked every page of this, and Daniel Acuna was back on art. I like the alternate artist, but I think Daniel Acuna is firing on all cylinders right now, and like it's some of his very best work.
By the way, I realized that in addition to this, Nick Spencer also did the story that brought Quasar back, and he's definitely a Gruenwald fan.
He's going to bring back our youth.
I think he might be this is what Gruenwald did too. He did political stuff, but through the lens of superheroes and costumes and all that kind of stuff.
Like when I was a kid, you know, they didn't touch on, like, evil corporations directly, but they had Roxxon, who stood in for it. And it wouldn't be like, oh, they're fracking or whatever. Yeah. It'd be like they are secretly funding, you know, mutations and developments and supervillains, you know, as part of a weapons division. But it's like they would use metaphor to talk about real stuff like that.
Well, Squadron Supreme was all about, you know, whether or not it was right to rewrite your enemy's brains and that kind of thing. And that was about Gruenwald. Gruenwald was always doing this kind of stuff. And nowadays people have tried to, especially guys like Brubaker and Rucka who do more realistic stuff, have sort of stripped away the veneer of superheroes, not doing metaphor anymore. They're going like straight at it.
Right.
And these guys are often kind of a ridiculous vehicle. You've got to have that veneer of superheroism.
Right.
And I think Spencer is doing a good job of that. Spencer may be the snarky heir apparent to Mark Gruenwald.
Right. That's an interesting thought. And, you know, I did not used to kind of enjoy Spencer's stuff, but I think maybe the kind of groundedness that's going on here. And also, I mean, you can tell it means a lot to him that as he's writing these characters, these are the issues that all of us are really struggling with right now. And I think he's enjoying having this as a mouthpiece for it. But even occasionally trying to challenge himself. We talked about how the last issue kind of took some pot shots at the Sort of extremes of the left,
yes.
And has had some laughs at their expense. But yeah, and I'm really liking it. There was something else I was going to mention. Oh yeah, on a sort of prurient level, I think Daniel Lacuna does a very sexy Misty Knight.
He does. Yes, and a sexy Sam Wilson.
He is.
If that's
honestly,
your bag.
He is. It's true. You're going to see shirtless Sam Wilson looking hunky as hell in this.
So my cheater pick is Star-Lord number 2 by Chip Zdarsky and Chris Anka. And I like this first issue, but having seen the second one now, I kind of see where they're going with it. Basically, he gets in trouble for...
He's trapped on Earth,
and he's grew up in space. Like, he hasn't been on Earth since he was, like, 7 years old.
Right, so he's not familiar maybe
so,
with
so
Earth
he's
stuff.
Kind of an alien on Earth, even though he's a human. And it opens with a courtroom scene where he's in trouble for... I think property damage and that kind of stuff.
Starting the brawl.
And what happens is that Abigail Brand shows up.
He got in a brawl that he and Wolverine got in a brawl.
I think that's right.
Like a barroom fight.
Yeah. So he and Abigail Brand shows up and basically gets him off the hook using her credentials.
Abigail Brand from S.H.I.E.L.D.
From S.W.O.R.D. actually.
Yeah, they're space division.
And, Alpha Flight Space Initiative is what she's from now. Mm-hmm. At any rate, she gets him off the hook, but his element gun gets impounded for the length of his, for his duration of his stay.
Uh-huh.
So he no longer has a gun, which means he has no superpowers at all.
Right, he's just a dude.
So he gets a new costume made up for him, and he's sent to community service. So this whole issue is him going and hanging out with this retiree who wants no part of it, and him taking him out of the world. So it's basically... Does Star-Lord still want to be a superhero even when he's got no superpowers? The answer, of course, is yes. It's really fun. He winds up getting a job that I won't give away, but it's such a great little bit of Marvel Universe, and it's going to be a really entertaining place to have him. It's just a goofy, but it also has a lot of heart. Story of a guy who's like kind of out of place on Earth. Mm-hmm. And it's probably closest in tone to something like, say, Spider-Woman or Unbeatable Squirrel Girl that I like, where it's sort of about superheroing on the fringe.
Right.
But I thought this was a really fun second issue. I actually liked it better than the first one, and I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with this. I did not think I wanted a Star-Lord book with him stranded on Earth, no powers. That sounds like a terrible pitch to me. Uh-huh. But Zdarsky's making it work. All right. Also on my list this week, I've got Amazing Spider-Man number 23 and Clone Conspiracy number 4, which sort of happen at the same time and get into the big plot.
But you should read Clone Conspiracy.
It turns out they're sort of simultaneous.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Black Widow number 10, which is Black Widow and Winter Soldier on the moon, which is a little weird. Gamora number 2, which
I'm going to recommend, by the way, Black Widow number 10, if only for that awesome cover from Chris Samnee that depicts Black Widow giving the Winter Soldier a tattoo. It's adorable.
Gamora number 2, which is more sort of space adventure. I don't know who this artist is. Oh, it's Chichetto. Chichetto's doing great art on this. It's good. It's good, big, epic space adventure stuff. Dr. Aphra number 3. Invincible Iron Man number 3. Which has a weird reveal. If anybody listening knows more about Bendis's Marvel than I do, they do this thing where they introduce a woman named Amanda Strong, and she's apparently like a rock musician from the 80s and Tony's real mom, and I don't have any idea what's happening, and it's weird for me to read.
I'm not sure if that's a fake out or if that's some new status quo that changed when we weren't looking.
I like this issue quite a bit. I like what they're doing with Riri Williams. I like what they're doing with Stark. At the same time, and they do a great
really like his defenders.
Riri Williams and Gwyneth Paltrow's character, whose name I'm blanking on, Pepper Potts, have a meetup that's really good. But I was definitely put off a little bit by, wait a minute, I don't know what's happening. I'm a Marvel guy. Why do I know what's happening? Which is very common in Bendis books. So if you're out there, explain to me why Maria Stark is apparently his adopted mom, or if this was all some kind of hoax and it was just badly written.
Wait, Maria Stark?
Maria Stark is not his mom.
Oh, not his mom. Right, right.
It was his adopted mom.
Sorry, you said Maria Stark, and I heard Maria Hill in my head.
Yes, no, different.
Yep.
Different Marias.
But rock star mom,
yes.
Is what's the deal?
Anyway, I want to know what the deal is. At any rate, I like the issue, but I was confused by that. Descender number 18 is another great issue and has some pretty notable developments. I don't want to spoil anything, but cool stuff. Divinity 3, Eric, Son of the Revolution, is what happened to Exo Manowar in this crazy Soviet alternate world. It's a lot of fun. Black Hammer Giant-Sized Annual gives a check-in on all the characters with different artists doing work in here, including Nate Powell, and Matt Kent, Dustin Nguyen, Ray Fox, Emmy Lennox, and Mike Allred.
Annie Lennox.
Sweet. Yes. Emmy Lennox, more correctly.
Oh.
Not the woman from the Eurythmics. Terry Moore's Motor Girl number 3. The Department H hardcover, which is really nice looking. I haven't finished the last two Mind Management yet, or otherwise I would be picking up this week.
This is Matt Kent's big near future underwater sci-fi mystery sort of thing.
Yep.
I think I talked up a few issues. In general, Teal and I have been following the book and really enjoying it, but I also did not get to see the ending of it, so I will be very tempted. It was very good.
And then the first collection of Jason Aaron and R.M. Guerra's The Goddamned, the biblical pre-apocalypse, post-apocalypse thing, which is a $10 Image trade and worth a look. Dave, what else you got on the list?
I just wanted to mention there's also a new book from Image called The Few, which mm-hmm. I don't know anything about. I just wanted to mention Image has a new book this week. I haven't read it yet. The art looked cool. It had kind of very, almost like a little bit Walt Simonson, whoever did Lone Wolf and Cub, a little bit of Bill Sienkiewicz.
Mm-hmm.
But there's different artistic talents like mixed in here. But it looked interesting and sort of a monochromatic color palette. And the only other one I wanted to mention was Star Trek Waypoint 3, which I believe has stories. This is the quarterly Star Trek book using all the different Star Trek eras.
It's not quarterly, is it?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's quarterly.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird. This one, they have a Deep Space Nine story and a Voyager story, but I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I've been generally enjoying that series so far.
It's also got Cecil Castellucci, the young adult author, writing a story in there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Nick, what else is on your list?
I've got a few more things. Two Boom books I want to mention. There's the new WWE comic. This is more of the kind of story-oriented one instead of the last one, which was a bunch of short stories.
Is it the story like the drama of the actual storylines that they portray on wrestling? Or is it the behind-the-scenes some sort of...
I think a little bit of both.
Yeah, I think they were saying it's going to be Friday Night Lights-esque. And I see it's Dennis Hopeless who writes some of my favorite books, so...
Then there's a new issue of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. This one is kind of interesting because there's the reveal of who the mysterious new ranger is. But also, this seems like it's going to be very Days of Future Past-ish because it looks like the Green Ranger and the Blue Ranger get shunted off into a timeline that is very dark and different from what they're used to.
Well, looking at the cover, I see a destroyed, I'm guessing that's some sort of Megazord. It's a Megazord. A little bit of a resemblance to the Planet of the Apes seaside thing, except instead of the Statue of Liberty, sunk in the sea, it's one of this destroyed Megazord.
And I feel like that would really improve the Tim Burton movie if there'd been a Megazord in it.
You know, a lot of things would have. Oh, and by the way, if you have been following this, or if you're just kind of a Power Rangers fan, they actually put out a free mask, like a little paper mask of that mysterious new ranger.
So if you buy Power Rangers number 11, you get a free white Power Ranger mask.
Yep, and you can be either a hero or villain, whatever he or she is.
Or whatever you feel.
We're not going to limit it.
Then the first issue of the new IDW book, Revolutionaries, which sees... a team composed
of... It's a spinning off of the Revolution miniseries.
Right. Now, it's kind of cool. You do get a timeline in the beginning of all the random things. But this features Action Man, Garrison Blackrock, which is a Cybertronian who's taken a human name, Cup, the G.I. Joe Mayday.
I don't know if people know Cup just off the top of their heads.
If you saw the Transformers movie...
He's the old man Transformer.
He's the old man Transformer.
Always telling stories. He's always stringing a good yarn.
Yep.
And the G.I. Joe Mayday and ROM.
That is weird.
All fighting sort of weird October Guard run by Major Blood. It is this weird mishmash of properties that IDW has done.
But you've been enjoying the kind of craziness of it.
They're kind
of
crazy, but they're...
They put these properties in a blender, they set it to puree, and you would think that it might come out just this mess, but would you call it an enjoyable mess, or is it a mess at all, in your opinion?
I don't feel like it's a mess at all. I feel like they're taking interesting aspects from all of those different properties and utilizing them. So,
And you are not like, I don't know anything about Action Man, I can't understand what's occurring.
No.
By the way, for those who don't know, Action Man was like one of those predecessors to like G.I. Joe, like a big action figure that could like, there's Arctic Action Man and Desert Action Man.
Honestly, they've condensed that a little bit. He is a British spy.
Okay.
Sort of James Bond, but kind of more high tech.
Okay. Kind of a gadget.
And he's been teamed up with Cup. which I think is a kind of a weird, back and forth. But, hey.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoyed it. Then there's the, from Marvel, the new issue of The Mighty Captain Marvel number one, which I haven't read yet, but we'll see where Carol goes from the fallout of Civil War II. And then I have a bunch of DC that I'll just burn through real quick. Justice League of America's been doing their one-shots. This one is the one-shot for the Ray.
What a great costume the Ray has.
I know the Ray. I don't know much about him, so I want to read this. But yeah, the costume is fantastic.
He was a 90s character with a cool costume by Joe Quesada. I don't know much about him beyond that.
Although he is a newer iteration of a Golden Age character, the Ray, who is part of the Freedom Fighters.
Right.
The 15th issue of Batman, which is the second part of the Rooftops Catwoman storyline.
Uh-huh.
Then the 13th issue of Justice League, which is a tie-in
to Justice League Suicide Squad.
But read that one first before this one. This one's focusing on Steve Trevor. And then there's Superman number 15, which continues the tie-in, weirdly, or I guess afterthought of Multiversity, seeing Grant Morrison's Multiversity being revisited by way of Patrick Gleason and...
that is to say, lots of alternate universe
versions and of Peter Tomasi, and then art by Ryan Sook and Ed Benes, Clay Mann, a bunch of people.
Why is there a Demon Superman on the cover? Is there a Demon Superman in the book?
In Multiversity, yeah, and there was a Demon Superman in Multiversity. Okay. So, yeah, it's weird and fun, and it's kind of cool to see these characters back, especially President Superman, which I love.
Yep.
But also the Superman from Red Sun, Superman Beyond from the Batman Beyond universe. Just some cool stuff. I'm excited. It's always fun to see those characters.
All right. We'll be back in just a second to talk about some TV and maybe a movie. All right, it is January, so of course it is time for Netflix and Amazon to release 100 different TV shows, apparently.
And then 100 more upcoming.
Yeah, it is crazy. Like, usually this is like a dead space for TV, but there's so much stuff.
The thing about Netflix is they just drop things.
Yeah.
Randomly, just here's like a whole season of like three shows you want to watch.
Yeah, there's by the way,
like
here's a
big, like build up and, massive like trailers and teasers and all that.
It is literally every week, here's a 12-episode show of TV.
And you're like, I can't keep up.
This week, however, was actually an 8-episode, which, by the way, I'm all for 8-episode seasons.
Yeah.
And especially half-hour, 8-hour episodes, because I can burn through it. This one is like hour-long shows, but this is Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events.
Yes.
It is 8 episodes, each one a little over an hour long. Mm-hmm. It is done by Barry Sonnenfeld, you might know from Men in Black or The Addams Family.
He produces all of them and
directs. He directs like half at least.
And directs half of them.
And you don't know the books that well, right?
No, I've never read any of the books.
But
I've read the first one, and I did find what I saw of the show, and I really have only watched a little bit of the first episode, is that for sure true to the unfortunate events of the thing, but definite expansion on in some ways, and a few stylistic integrations, like Patrick Warburton as Lemony Snicket. His narrational integration in it, it kind of does some of the same stuff that the narrator in the book does, where he's kind of talking to the reader very specifically.
Honestly, I think Patrick Warburton is amazing in this.
He is.
He's really good.
I honestly think everyone's really good, but him and that narration is some of my favorite stuff.
Patrick Warburton is the stand. His whole thing
like
where
he's standing around and like he looks like this kind of like 50s or 60s, like almost like a
Rod Serling-esque.
Madman, Rod Serling-esque kind of guy. Sitting around sort of commenting from, like, the sidelines on the events going on as, like, the omniscient narrator in a kind of dry sort of way.
He talks directly to the viewer, and he says things like, you should stop watching, it's just going to be terrible.
Yeah.
And it's a really funny, he's not wrong, like, bad things keep happening to these kids, and yet it's done in such a quirky, fun way that it's not, like, it's fun, it's Addams Family dark, Tim Burton dark.
I think those are both good comparisons.
Anyway, each 2-episode season is a book. Or not season. Each 2 episodes is a book, basically. So this was confirmed for us by Tila, who has read a lot of the books, if not all of them.
I believe the first book is called, like, The Bad Beginning or A Bad Beginning.
A Bad Beginning.
That's basically the first 2 episodes of the show.
But they seem to go through several guardians, all played by notable people like Asif Manvi, Alfre Woodard, and of course their main guardian, who becomes their nemesis very quickly, is Count Olaf, played by Neil Patrick Harris to perfection here.
Yeah. The part he was born to play.
Because this is a tough role, because he's got to be...
Despicable.
I mean, Jim Carrey played him in the movies, and I think some people did not like that they're having someone besides Jim Carrey play him.
Right.
But I can't imagine Jim Carrey pulling this off, because he has to be downright evil and bad. Like, he's a bad person. He's not like a likable sneak. But, I mean, he slaps the kid.
Right. Yeah. Right. But he is a really bad person who is still sometimes somewhat kind of entertainingly vile.
Yes, he has a charm, and you like him, and his goofy, like...
I mean, I compare him a little bit to the Grinch, who Jim Carrey also played.
Yeah.
In the second movie, essentially, his portrayal of Stefano...
Yeah, where he takes on another identity.
Oh my God, I died laughing.
You're going to love the identity he takes on in the final one, because was amazing. I won't give it away, but
Stefano.
It was, yeah. Neil Patrick Harris gets to really do voices. There's a song. It's the Count, it's the Count, it's the Count. He does the opening song, which is really good. He's really good.
Bad guys.
His cast of henchmen.
His henchmen are great.
And also, the kids who are at the center of it are really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they, you got the two kids, like the 14-year-old girl, 12-year-old boy, and the infant, which is a little bit of a difficult thing to portray.
Actually, no, she speaks in baby talk, but they understand it.
Right, so they run subtitles.
The little girl's the inventor, he's the smart one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, she's sort of kind of the baby that kind of eats things.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely a vibe here. It's not surprising it came from YA, because it is all the kids, including Sterling K. Brown plays Poe there, or something. Forget his first name, but he's a banker.
Oh, yes.
Who sort of is the guy, because their parents were rich, who is sort of in charge of
their financial well-being and getting their inheritance to them when she comes of age.
But he's also the one who sort of keeps shepherding them, these guardians, and they keep trying to tell him, no, that's the Count, and he never believes them.
Right, he's kind of a doofus,
and it's definitely the adults are never able to help them. It's always the kids need to help themselves.
Exactly. Right.
Which is very much in the kids' adventure mold. Anyway, I didn't know if I was going to like this as much as I did, but I really enjoyed it. It's a ton of fun.
What I've seen was good. I honestly don't know that I've seen anybody, at least among my circle of friends, who has failed to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's really good, and that's correct. Failed to enjoy it would be the way. They failed.
It's a weakness on their part.
They have failed to enjoy it. Amazon also dropped a full show. It is called Sneaky Pete, and it's done by Graham Yost, is one of the executive producers. He's from The Americans and Justified, and this is, I forget who the actual showrunner is, but it's David Shore, I want to say.
Another notable person.
But anyway, it's, the lead is played by Giovanni Ribisi, and he's a guy who was in jail for con artistry, although there's a twist to that. They do the flashback. But basically, his cellmate was this guy, Pete, who was always talking about his grandparents, this perfect child he had in Connecticut. And so when he gets out, and this crime lord, played by Bryan Cranston to perfection, has basically said, you know, don't come to New York, you're going to be in some trouble. He adopts this identity of Pete and goes to Connecticut and becomes a bounty hunter for their bail bond organization. The bail bondsman is it's grandparents, and Margot Martindale is his grandmother, and she's great. She immediately senses out that he's not what he says he is, but she's also playing along. He's got a cousin who is now a single mom, and she's like their other bounty hunter. And it's very much sort of like a family drama, but with a little bit of comedy to it. Okay. And
at first I thought you were going to say it was very Elmer Leonard style, like that kind of humor. But no, it's not really that.
It's probably closer in tone to something like Justified, although it's not as action heavy.
Okay.
But it's definitely sort of, and I guess, you know, Elmer Leonard is Justified, but it's Elmer Leonard adjacent, but it's not quite as quirky, I would say.
I love Giovanni Ribisi. I've always liked him, and I have to remind myself, he's actually one of those guys who can do a lot of different genres,
because
he started out in Friends, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, playing the Phoebe's brother. Well, my daughter, who was watching it with me, declared, that guy has a weasel voice. She's not wrong. He's got a weasel voice and a weasel face.
He does.
And they use that well here. Bryan Cranston is playing a great gangster, very different from his Walt, but also very, very interesting.
So this is like an hour-long drama?
Yeah. And there's some callbacks to The Sting and sort of that kind of con artistry. Okay. There's a flashback to reveal how this con all went wrong and what led him in jail. And
it all sounds great.
It's really, really good. I'm 5 episodes in and I'm really enjoying it. So I'm definitely going to try and get through more of it.
8 episode or 10 episode?
I believe this is 10.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Still not bad.
Yeah. Jumping back over to network TV, which is something we don't watch a ton of, I think, but we all watched the first episode of Emerald City.
Right. Well, yeah. I don't think anybody like was like so wowed by it that we're like, we must report on this because we forgot to report on it.
Yep.
But we were talking about it, and it seemed like we all kind of liked it.
I kind
of
liked it.
In spite of, I think we would agree, all of us agree, kind of uneven.
Yeah.
It is.
Maybe like the casting is a little weird, the writing is not like amazing.
It's very networky.
Yeah, it's very networky. But there is some there's definitely an appeal to it.
Well, it doesn't hurt that the visuals themselves look fantastic,
right? It's the guy who's the what the director or producer of it is how do you say his name?
Tarsem.
What's the full name though?
Tarsem Singh.
Tarsem Singh. Yes, known as a visual stylist who's done all of his movies have these kind of very vivid, rich flashes of color and surreal imagery. Like he's known for like The Cell that Jennifer.
Oh, that's right.
What's her name?
Lopez.
Jennifer Lopez movie where she goes inside the mind of a serial killer. Like that's kind of typical of him, and they're kind of like letting him kind of run with that in this. Where you've got you know, as best described, this is a reasonable way to put it: Game of Thrones, Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've seen serious spins on Wizard of Oz, and usually they seem kind of. It's almost kind of slightly distasteful.
Yeah.
But here, I feel like there's enough interesting stuff going on that I'm quite enjoying it. You have this this woman who's
she's a nurse from our world. She is Dorothy.
Yeah.
And through a series of events, she winds up in a police car with a police canine that becomes Toto. And she's got a police uniform on, so she looks like a cop. And you know, she winds up there. She kills the Wicked Witch in a very interesting way.
Right. I think we could say the car just runs her ass over, you know, projected by the tornado.
But that's not what kills her.
But that's true. That's true. There's more with that. And that's probably the most, one of the coolest scenes in the whole thing is exactly how that comes about. Because, yes, she does not just die from
and
that.
And the other notable thing is Vincent D'Onofrio, a.k.a. the Kingpin, is here playing the wizard.
Right.
And I don't love his performance here. I think he's a little handy.
It's larger than life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It may grow on me, but yes, he's for sure kind of hammy.
But he's outlawed wizardry, right, which kind of makes sense if you're a fake wizard.
Right.
You don't want real wizardry. And so it's like the Wicked Witch of the East, right?
I mix it up a little bit.
East
because
the
last, they, right? They're tweaking the conventions of the books and the movies.
Well, who's the one who survives? Is the Wicked Witch of the East, right? Or is the it's the Wicked Witch of the West.
No, I think the Wicked Witch of the West dies, Wicked Witch of the East.
I don't know. Whichever one it is, it's her and Glinda are sort of working together to, because they're all the witches are sisters, and they're like doing these rituals to put their sister to bed and get the magic that their sister was still practicing. And
right.
It's
you have these Game of Thronesian political machinations and alliances and temporary alliances going on. And meanwhile, you know, there's a little bit of sort of almost CW aspect of it, where as Dorothy travels through Oz and kind of meets these factions, including the Munchkins, which are like the Munjakin, which are like these sort of tribal, almost like Highlander versions of them.
They're like D&D
barbarians.
I thought that was cool.
I liked it too.
Like the guy who plays their leader guy, like he's more notable to me than like the dude playing the wizard.
Yeah,
he's a more notable character. But they were cool. The winged monkeys, which are essentially these like clockwork concoctions that are
those are cool.
That's like their drones.
Yeah,
was kind of cool.
And Scarecrow is young and hunky. Don't forget that.
That's where I was going. Mysterious past. Yeah, he looks like a dude kind of who's, you know, he's been sort of crucified as for some sort of bad thing he's done.
I thought that was a clever way to do the Scarecrow thing, though.
Yeah, yeah, it was, and he's kind of got this ashy, sooty, like straw over his body, you know, from what they did to him. But he is a hunky dude.
Yep. Also, and I think this is the thing that I liked. They put in Mombi,
and
Tip, which are characters that
stuff from the books.
From the books, yeah.
You might know at least somewhat from the movie Return to Oz. Who was that actress? Fairuza Balk.
Or if you read Eric Shanmugam's Brooke Oz comics, which is where I found about it.
Yeah. But yeah, there is some deep cuts into the lore of the Oz books in here. I think what interested me most was just kind of seeing, what were their spins on them? They do have some pretty neat spins on it. Everything is sort of tarnished. The Yellow Brick Road is not this gleaming path like it is in the original 30s movie. You know, it's this kind of barely paved, kind of path through Oz. And yeah, you do get a lot of Game of Thrones light is really what I have to call it, because it does not have that depth, and they're not going to go quite as dark with it. But you know, I would not want Oz to go quite that dark.
No.
So they might have found a kind of happy medium. I'm going to watch the second episode this week, see what I think. But I think, like I say, surprisingly decent.
Yeah, we all kind of liked it. Nick, tell me about this Young Pope.
Young Pope is HBO's new, I guess it's a miniseries.
It's a miniseries. I feel like it's just going to run this week. Like episodes 1 and 2 are both up.
Yeah, one was on Sunday, 2 was last night. I haven't watched the second episode, but it basically tells the tale of Jude Law ascending to the papacy of, and he's one of the youngest popes ever.
Now,
that name sounds like a joke.
Now he's playing, it's definitely sort of tongue in cheek dark humor. His Pope Innocent something, but it is not Jude Law. It's a character he's playing.
Correct.
Because I think it'd be hilarious if it was about Jude Law sending the papacy.
That would be great.
I mean, it kind of is, because he's definitely playing a sort of arch.
Yeah, and it's weird visuals and kind of...
It opens with a dream sequence of him giving a speech to this assembled crowd.
Well, basically him just being made Pope and sort of his, initial speech is just insane.
And then he starts, he's like, we've forgotten to get abortions, we've forgotten to have birth control, we've forgotten to have homosexual relationships.
Everyone should have sex.
And it's like this crazy thing. And it's a dream sequence. It's like an opening dream sequence. But it was a really striking opener.
Is it a satire?
No, not really.
Because kind of more of an absurdist?
Because it's sort of a behind-the-scenes look at kind of the machinations of the Roman Catholic Church.
It's maybe comparable to something more like Scandal, or like it's a little soapy, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
A little bit, but there's also that weirdness vibe that it's not David Lynch, but it's almost like Oliver Stone.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it's just kind of bizarre at times. And it all sort of falls on the shoulders of Jude Law, and I feel like he's completely up for it, because he's a great actor.
He gives a great performance. Diane Keaton is also there as the nun who raised him, because he was an orphan.
Yes.
And he brings her in as sort of his backup. And I think based on the trailers, I think they're going to sour a little bit between.
I believe so.
You know, although it's called Young Pope, isn't Jude Law 30s, 40s?
Yeah, I mean, he's still young. He's in for a Pope.
But I mean, for a Pope.
But he's in there. He's smoking. He's dealing with this cardinal who's very proud of being the man behind the throne. And they are immediately at odds with one another. So it's sort of a power struggle between the two of them. The cardinal's like, you can't smoke in here. And he's like, well, who said that? He said the Pope. And he's like, yeah, well, there's a new Pope. So there's definitely
he wants to start the day with cherry
Coke Zero.
Coke Zero. That is how he starts. And it's an American.
He's American. American. Yeah.
Okay. So that does not happen very often.
Interesting. That is a weird premise.
It is a weird premise.
But it's interesting. I was a little lukewarm on the first episode, but I definitely want to give it more, because I think it has probably more to say.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see where it's intending to go.
Yes. So.
Yeah. And I like Jude Law, too.
Yep. Finally, Nick, I know that you watched the Suicide Squad Extended Edition.
Yes. And where I was happy with the original one, the Extended Edition actually fixes a few problems that I had, especially with the Joker and Harley Quinn romance.
Okay.
There's a few scenes added in that kind of explain...
Round
it out a bit, where it's not so one-sided and kind of icky.
Yeah.
Even then,
they had already toned it down so that it was not the violent thing of the comics.
No.
It had some violent aspects, but it seemed more consensual and like a slightly healthier relationship within its crazy context.
Correct.
From what I gather, they kind of fleshed it out a little bit.
Yeah, they fleshed it out more. They also fleshed out some relationship between Flag and Deadshot. Extended a few scenes that I felt like needed to be, giving each of the members of the squad a bit more to them and interaction, where it felt like they were just basically a bunch of random people thrust into an action sequence.
Right.
After okay. action
Is there
sequence.
Anything else more done with Captain Boomerang?
Yes, there actually are a few things. Jai Courtney is not a guy I usually like, but I like him as Captain Boomerang.
Yeah, I did too. His together on Boomerang was one of my sort of favorite parts of it.
And
even though he's not quite the Boomerang of the comics.
No, he's not the Boomerang of the comics, but he's good enough. Mm-hmm. No, I really enjoyed it. I definitely think it's worth watching.
Would you say like 20 minutes or so?
Yeah, I thought it was 20 minutes added to it.
I'll probably try and check that out. I like the movie pretty decently.
Yeah.
All right, that wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more, and until that time,
Yojo!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.